Show. Head on to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to the middle of the week. Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Welcome to Conversation Radio. 3 hours of it coming your way. And, we got a couple of giggles to start with. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for everyone, by the way. But, of course, it's Wednesday, isn't it? Why, by Jove, it is. It's Wednesday, the 14th of January. I just had to go to the cathedral closet and pull out the mitre of reason and the robes, the vestments of common sense. You'd already know that if you were friended up with me on Facebook. There's a Horn, the Horn group on Facebook as well. Doesn't cost a dime to join. Jump right in. Now that's Bob is, you know, the thing that you do with what you're doing. Yeah, you know, putting on the vestments of common sense and the mitre of reason here in the cathedral. Because it's not just Wednesday, it's not just the middle of the week, it's not just downhill to Friday. No, 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 no. No, brethren and sistren. It is, in fact, Wednesday. And it is prayer meeting. Choir master!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around!
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around!
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, Lenny and Moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, brethren and sistren, come on down the blood-red aisle and lay your hands upon the subwoofer here at the altar in the cathedral of common sense and feel the healing, raise, oh, glory flowing through you. Praise! It is prayer meeting. It's Wednesday on the Horn. You know what that means, brethren and sistren. Usually that means we take a nice long run at the insanities of the religion industry. Now, I guess we sort of started a day early yesterday with a wonderful conversation with David Silverman from American Atheists, not to mention the insane lunatic fundamentalists of their own stripe marching in the streets of New York City. So let us, by all means, continue where we left off, of a sort. I mentioned this last night as something I was going to get to, but it was so good that I sort of just had to save it. Well, it's like, remember those when you were growing up, you remember those little taffy candies that were called Now and Laters? They were so named because one was to eat one now and save some for later. In the argot of the area in which I grew up, that was translated into Southernese as Nihilators. Nihilators. And they come in apple and grape and cherry and lemon and lime and all kinds of Nihilators. So I did the same thing last night, this being prayer meeting. I had some last night and saved some for later. We go now to Mississippi. Mississippi. In particular, we are interested in Mississippi in one Representative Gary Chisholm, rhymes with never mind, from District 37 in Mississippi, who has sponsored legislation that probably will pass out of committee. No kidding. Really. Yes. Sponsored legislation in Mississippi to amend the Mississippi Constitution. Now, he's not satisfied. He's not going to pass no law. Just like, you know, you heard David Silverman say it last night. If you let the Fundy freaks, I'm paraphrasing, get the teeth in their bit, you can't give them a little bit. Did you remember what Dave Silverman said last night about the Kentucky case, the Kentucky Homeland Security case, where they passed this law in the dark and still of the night that said that the Department of Homeland Security in Kentucky had to put at the top of everything, by the grace of God, or we cannot. What is it? Come on. We are unable to protect the citizens of Kentucky without the protection of Almighty God. Right? How American Atheists only found out about this, not because of due diligence, and it's not a lack of diligence, it's just that it's a considerably smaller organization than the religion industry running like poison all over this country. And it's just hard to keep up with all the lunacy, all the idiocy, all the hate, all the spite, and all the general evil that the religion industry perpetrates in this country. And so the folks at American Atheists missed it a couple of years ago when the Kentucky legislature passed this law that said Kentucky can't protect her citizens without Almighty God. No mention of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Krishna and Vishnu were left out, and I'm here to tell you, they're pissed. The Buddha was left out, but he's not pissed because he's the Buddha. Huitzilopochtli, the god of blood and war and gore and death in ancient Mexico, he was left out, and he is really pissed. I guess, being as how these are all imaginary creatures. But anyway, the American Atheists only found out about this little law because people followed the law of the state, and they put up a plaque at the Department of Homeland Security in Kentucky and said, we cannot protect Kentucky without the help of Almighty God. And the Kentucky fundamentalists weren't happy with that. They wanted lots of plaques. They wanted it all over creation. They wanted it on websites and billboards and stationery. I don't know, tattooed on the back of little Fundy babies' necks in Kentucky, right? And that is how the American Atheists found out about this flagrant spitting in the face the idea of a society built on a constitutional separation between government and those who would destroy it through religion. That's the only way that they found out. And as Dave noted, these fundamentalists, these Christian Taliban in America, these extremists, these dangerous right-wing
evangelical religion industry extremists never let up. It is truly a case of give them an inch and they'll take a furlong or a league or whatever's longer than a mile. And that's how it came to the attention of Dave Silverman and the folks that he, the folks there at American Atheists, the folks that he works with. Now, excuse me. The same thing is going on in Mississippi, only different. Wow, that was easy. Representative Gary Chisholm, C-H-I-S-M, not C-H-I-S-H-O-L-M. No, they were running out of alphabets when they named Gary, or alphabet letters. Bottom of the cereal box, I guess. I don't know. Gary Chisholm from District 37 in Mississippi, and I have no idea where District 37 is, but it must be a real fundamentalist hellhole, wants to amend the Constitution of the state of Mississippi, just like the fundy freaks who passed all the defense of marriage statutes in the various states weren't satisfied with that. After they got those passed, they started trying to amend their several state constitutions and even mounted an attempt I can't seem to come up with one strong enough for what they wanted to do to the Constitution of the United States by putting religious marriage into it. But anyway, they want to do that with this as well. And don't think for a minute that the fundies of the religion industry, the Taliban right, will be happy with an amendment in Mississippi. It will only empower them. Well, listen, hey, you know, this is the homily here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. You got to let me get there. What kind of a constitutional amendment is this in the state of Mississippi? I'll tell you. It is a constitutional amendment because, see, if you put it in the Constitution, therefore it can't be just a law and principles of supremacy won't kick in that says, you know, it's unconstitutional because if it's in the Constitution, it's by de facto constitutional, at least within the framework of Mississippi's Constitution. They want to put it's funny, or it would be funny if it weren't so damn dangerous. Because, see, these laws aren't aimed at the fundies. These laws are aimed at you, and they're aimed at me. And it's breathtaking. A constitutional amendment in the state of Mississippi that reads as follows.
House Bill Number 25, an act to require the State Board of Education, to include certain language explaining that evolution is a theory in the inside front cover of certain public school textbooks and for related purposes, and the occasional miscreant dolphin.
No, I'm sorry, I added that part.
For related purposes. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Mississippi, Section 1, the State Board of Education shall require every textbook that includes the teaching of evolution in its contents to include the following language on the inside front cover of the textbook. The word, and this is what we're going to put in there, it's a quote. The word theory has many meanings, including systematically organized knowledge, abstract reasoning, a speculative idea or plan, or a systematic statement of principles. Scientific theories are based on both observations of the natural world and assumptions about the natural world. They are always subject to change in view of new and confirmed observations. This here textbook discusses evolution, a controversial theory some scientists present as a scientific explanation for the origin of living things. No one was present when life first appeared on Earth. Therefore, any statement about life's origins should be considered a theory. Evolution refers... My God, this is still the quote. God, it's hard enough to get kids to read their textbooks in high school as it is. They'll be asleep by the time they get past paragraph two of this dunderheaded mess. Evolution refers to the unproven belief that random, undirected forces produce living things. There are many topics with unanswered questions about the origin of life which are not mentioned in your textbook, including the sudden appearance of the major groups of animals in the fossil record known as the Cambrian explosion, the lack of new major groups of other living things appearing in the fossil record, the lack of transitional forms of major groups of plants and animals in the fossil record, and the complete and complex set of instructions for building a living body possessed by all living things. Study hard now and keep an open mind. Sorry, hairball. I don't know where to start. Textual analysis actually comes pretty easy to me most of the time. But, you know, this is another rubber brick moment. I try to... Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya. See, he's singing. Well, I mean, it's the closest I can get to singing. Some people would say that, you know, you could just run that into a... You know, I want to tell you that waterboarding is not torture, but when Bob Kincaid sings, we won't even subject people to Guantanamo to that. This is a struggle. The word theory has many meanings. Yeah. This here textbook discusses evolution. Controversial theory. No. It's only controversial to people who have roughly the same the mental capacities as those things that they're referring to in the fossil record. And then there's the fossil record. We're talking about fundies here who believe that the devil put the fossils in the dirt to confound the unbeliever. They're always subject to change in view of new and confirmed observations. Mm-hmm. Evolution refers to the unproven belief that random undirected forces produce living things. Random undirected forces. See, I call BS on the use of the word forces. Now, granted, I am not a scientist, nor do I play one on the radio. But I prefer the word actions, maybe, or events. But forces presuppose... get me if I'm wrong here, okay? Doesn't force presuppose someone or something able to enact that force? There are far better scientific minds listening to this program, by far, than I.
But I see a presupposition in there that doesn't work for me. And that's the way it is with fundies who have the bit in their teeth. They run till the lather forms on their long, hairy manes. And as such, they lie. Yeah, there's the word I'm after. They lie.
The sudden appearance of the major groups of aminals in the fossil record.
And see that, really, Ernest Hemingway kind of taught us this. It's the adjectives and the adverbs that get you into trouble. Because when you're talking about using the word sudden in the context of millions of years, sudden can mean a couple of hundred thousand.
Which is, when you get right downright biblical. And a day is to God as a million years. Or thousands of years. Because I don't think they had the numerological system back there to get to a million. Let's see. I mean, I'm trying to think of my Roman numerals because we had to wait until the Arabs came along before we got the funny little numbers that we use today. As we noted before, the Mayans came up with a zero-based concept, but they were wiped out before it could really be put to use, and now it's more of a sort of a mathematical curiosity. But let's see, my Roman. How did the Greeks count? How did primitive peoples who were absolutely bemused by something as complex as a wheelbarrow count?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Wait, gotta get my shoe off. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Wait a minute, gotta get my other shoe off here. Let's see, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Hey, wait a minute! I can count 21!
But sudden, you know, no. A day is as a thousand years to the Almighty.
Yeah, okay, good luck with all that.
The sudden origin of life, or the sudden appearance of major groups of aminals, really refers to the period of time that sudden really isn't capable of accounting for or describing. Because sudden, as it is used in the common parlance and what it's meant to mean to these poor, innocent, usually 10th grade biology students, is, you know, poof. It's there. Maybe this would have been better if it had had like asterisk, poof, sudden appearance, because that's what they mean.
And God said, let there be weasels, and there was weasels, and it was weaselly.
See? Poof. This is madness.
Study hard and keep an open mind. Even though we're doing everything we can to nail that poor little mind of yours shut, kid.
Instructions, the complete and complex set of instructions for building a living body possessed by all living things.
Instructions?
Instructions? I got a problem with instructions. Because instructions imply the giving of them. See, as I've noted on a number of occasions, this stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum. Fundies speak in a code that normal people don't speak. And when they say things like sudden, or instructions, or just a theory, that means something entirely different to them than it means to you and me, because you and me, we're normal. To the extent that, as Peter Godbold often noted, normal is nothing more than a setting in a dryer. Sorry, I just love that one. Had to steal it from him. I did get permission first. And then there's this nuttiness. About how if it wasn't observed, it has to be called a theory. You caught that sentence, didn't you? Brothers and sisters.
No one was present when life first appeared on Earth. Therefore, any statement about life's origin should be considered a theory.
Oh, God, I love it when somebody gets what I'm at. This in from our buddy David in Tennessee. Are you counting to 21 or just happy to see me? I'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
No one was present when life first appeared on Earth. Therefore, any statement about life's origins should be considered a theory.
Now, some might suggest that what I'm about to engage in is called a reductio ad absurdum. I would counter, however, that I cannot reductio ad absurdum something that is so absurdum that it starts at the very origin of the species of absurdum. This is more like initio, ob absurdum. Oh, well, no, initio ob absurdum. See, this is why I'll never be Pope. That and the fact that I got nothing for Santa suits, I just don't.
No one was present when life first appeared on Earth. Therefore, any statement about life's origin should be considered a theory.
Where do you want to start with that one? No one was blank when blank first happened on Earth. Therefore, any statement about blank should be considered a theory. No one was present when the first tree toppled over and fell to the ground. No. No one, let's see, there were really big palm fronds back then. That's because you can see them in the roofs of the coal mines and stuff. The giant, like, oak tree-sized, the ferns. That's what I'm thinking of. Ferns, not palms. Ferns. And so no one was present when the first fern fell to the earth. Therefore, any statement about gravity should be considered a theory.
Oh, that's going to work well.
I suggest that we take, Gary Chisholm? Yeah, Gary Chisholm. I suggest that we take his little statement here and ask him to, if he's willing to follow through on the logical flow of what he's arguing. No one will, in other words, if Gary Chisholm gets all Wile E. Coyote and walks off a cliff and no one is watching, will he still fall Wile E. Coyote-like about 700 feet into the canyon, gorge, and make a little poof thing at the bottom when he hits? Just ask it. Yes, brothers and sisters, I think it is time that we invoke my brother, my sister, Pastafarians. It is time that we invoke, by virtue of our exercise of our First Amendment rights, it is time that we invoke that maximum deity. It is time that we demand that Gary Chisholm include the flying spaghetti monster in his constitutional amendment. See? Now listen, it works.
No one was present when he first touched us with his noodly appendage. Therefore, any statement about life's origins not being caused by the fact that the flying spaghetti monster started with a tree, a mountain, and a dwarf should be considered a theory. See how it works? No one was present when the elephant that holds up the earth first stepped onto the back of the turtle. Therefore, any statement about the earth not being held up on the back of an elephant that's standing on a turtle, 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 that's standing, I'm tired of turtles, should be considered a theory. Evolution refers to the unproven belief that random, undirected forces produce living things. This is just troubling language. And see, this is the mess that these people get in. They want to say, we hate you scientific people. We hate you. You're making the world all confusinating for us. And you're saying that maybe a big old bearded feller didn't make this here world, but he done did. We believe it. Amen, sweet Jesus. We believe. And they don't understand that believing doesn't count in science. Gravity? Boyle's gas laws? Pick one. There's lots of scientific laws. The law of conservation of mass and energy. Although I'm beginning to call into question the law of conservation of mass and energy simply because it would appear that inside the skull of a fundy, the mass that begins as a brain depletes to nothing and certainly is not converted into energy. Although it does sort of confirm the second law of thermodynamics insofar as all things proceed toward entropy. But like I said, I'm talking off the top of my head because science ain't my gig. So that's where we begin with tonight's prayer meeting, brethren and sistren. And let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, science isn't my gig either.
Sister Kate!
This is
Hallelujah!
Oh, praise God.
Or something.
Bless her heart.
She can't help it.
God love her. Representative Chisholm not the same. I don't know what district he's from, but I heard this story and thought, oh, God, here we go again. What have I gotten myself into? He's not the same person who suggested that the trouble with our kids down here was that they didn't have perennial care. Remember that story?
Yes, I do. It kind of makes you wonder, don't it?
They all talk funny.
No, you're the one talks funny. Let's keep that straight.
You're absolutely right. And I wanted to briefly connect some dots tonight that were pretty scary for me. I've been wandering around on the web, and people who are waiting for the end of the world. Oh, God, yeah. Love them.
Bless their hearts. They can't help it. They're dumber than
a bag of dirt. I know a lot of smart dirt, so I'm
happy mud. You know, if you remember the last rites from the Buchanan, I'm happy mud.
No, I don't know what.
Oh, I read that last night. No, never mind.
Well, sometimes my guys don't all stay in the backyard, yeah. So I don't always get.
We don't want to hear you now.
Right. So anyway, I wanted to briefly touch on some things that are happening around the globe that people might not be aware of, and in terms of being prepared for what might be coming at us. For example, the Big West refineries back in the Flying J people have a refinery in Salt Lake City, and they have one in, I think it's Bakersfield, and Big West went down a few days ago, like maybe 2.5 weeks ago, and they were going to just do a shutdown turnaround and come up in 10 days, and they're still not up. So that means they're not producing any fuel, and Flying J is still in holding whatever that's called, bankruptcy. So that's a terrible story. I mean, it's just one of those dots to connect. And in terms of the layoffs and the shutdowns and the manufacturing, Freightliner and Cessna and Cummins Diesel have cut back a tremendous amount of people in their workforce and their manufacturing. And so, you know, the big trucks, if we're not making the big trucks, what's, you know, what's now what's you know, because they're just not on the road. You know, I mean, it's hard to believe that when you're going down the freeway and there's the freeway is loaded with trucks, but there should be more. And I think it was Dana Corporation. I'm not sure. They might have been up in Gary, Indiana. They make truck axles, and they've cut
yeah.
their crew. Oh no, they're in Kentucky. That Dana's in Kentucky in Henderson, and the people who publish the Farmer's Almanac up in I think New Hampshire or Boston, they've cut back on the crew, and I don't even know if they're going to publish the almanac again, and. A drapery company in North Carolina is out of business, or they're fixing to go out of business. I mean, the cutbacks are just terrible, I'm sure you know about this, that Parkersburg, West Virginia is the third hospital in West Virginia to cut back on the staff and the
mm-hmm.
and the hours that the staff work and the nursing crews and
you know, there's a little, if you don't mind, Kate, can I throw a little context behind that?
Yeah.
When we talk about cutting nursing hours, and bear in mind, I know there's a lot of nurses that like to work these hours. They work, two 12s and a 14 or two 14s and a 16, and then they get 4 days off or some such.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's where the cutbacks begin,
mm-hmm.
if you can fathom.
Mm-hmm.
So it works to some of the nurses' benefits because they like it that way, but it is a de facto staff cut to use those kinds of schedules.
Yeah.
So there's been a staff cut.
Yeah.
And now there's a staff cut of the staff cut.
Right. Right.
I mean, pretty soon, if healthcare gets much worse in this country, you're gonna walk into the hospital and it's gonna be like something out of a Clint Eastwood movie because it's gonna be just all echoes and you know, wah wah wah. Yeah. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the point I'm trying to make is that the collapse is happening at such a rate. I mean, I'm not a scientific person, but I know a little bit about chaos theory, and once it starts rolling, it just doesn't stop, and the farther it goes, the faster it goes, and it just gets me crazy that people aren't maybe paying attention and don't have access to the information, or they don't have time to look it up, or you know, whatever. What's the saying about for want of a nail? Doesn't that have to?
Yeah,
be
for want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of the shoe, the horse was lost. For want of the king was lost. And the king was lost.
That's what. I read in the Telegraph out of the UK today that there's a story. I think it was called "Shipping Rates Hit Zero as the Trade Sinks." There, the suppliers aren't buying anything out of China or out of Asia, and nobody's selling anything. They can't get letters of credit for people to buy from the suppliers. The ships are sitting in Shanghai and L.A. and Long Beach. They're just sitting there idle.
Yeah. They're basically, at this point, barnacle smorgasbords.
Yes, and if they are loaded, that's one thing. And if they're sitting there, once the trade stops plunging and the demand comes back on, it'll take 3 months to get the ships back up out, especially if they're in mothballs. It'll take the ships, you know, we're living in an just-in-time delivery system. And I mentioned the other day, pretty soon we're not going to have shirts and T-shirts and socks and, you know.
Yeah, time to learn the darn. Yeah, we were talking, time to learn to darn again, guys,
yeah,
ladies.
Yeah, right. And so for the one.
Little ends of my fingers are going to bleed.
No, they don't. You use a thimble. And that's why you put the sock over.
You know what I know about thimbles? I know it's the piece on the Monopoly board that I never chose. I wanted to be the battle car, the battleship, the cannon, or the race car.
Okay.
That's my experience with thimbles. I left them. Yeah.
Thimbles are a little bit bigger than that.
But there was a thimble on the Monopoly board.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to be it. Or the stupid little wheelbarrow.
Okay, but for want of, the things that are disappearing, they continue to shock me because it's, one day when I was doing this whole little, my stacks, I said, I just sat here in my chair looking around in my life thinking, every single thing in my vision or in my imagination is being affected. Anything that's plastic, anything that's cotton, anything that's metal, anything that's electric, anything that's electronic, and everything has the cutbacks, the layoffs, the bankruptcies, the shutdowns, the turnarounds, the everything. Okay, I read something out of Yankton, South Dakota today that they manufacture those little crystal based control products that are used to the chips that run telephone networks, computers, and telephone networks and switches and modems. They're going out of business, or they've cut back to like 20 people on the staff out of 180, and so that run those little crystals the controls that run the switchers on telephone networks and modems and things. And the other one was, this was just, I thought, my God, no. I don't remember where this was at, but the suspension device that holds the chip above the hard drive, the company that makes them.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a little bitty suspension device that holds the chip right above the hard drive. They're cutting back and just about to go out of business. And I thought, what do we do without that suspension device? For want of
there's one company that makes it.
Probably,
right?
Yeah. Right. They didn't imply that, but I mean.
Well, but see that what you're pointing to, Kate, runs so far out from where you're starting, and that's not a criticism of you.
I know.
Do you remember what was it? A couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, when virtually every can of green beans in the country was recalled because one cannery was responsible for almost all the damn green beans?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember when all the peanut butter got yanked?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, this has to do, it's a free market. That's what that has to do with.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find so, it's unfair to say deliciously or delightfully, but it's both. Ironic.
I was going to say, but ironic works, yeah.
Yeah, is that this is the very thing that we criticized the Soviet Union for. Well, they've only got one tractor plant. Now, you can't get no tractors less than it comes from that one plant. And thank God we got us some capitalism here in America.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't import bananas
Oh, did you see the banana story?
No.
I'm sorry. I thought I saw the banana story, and you know what? Honest to God, I kid you not, I left the story alone because I said, this will make it, no way this doesn't go into the Kate's Mad Max list.
Well, which one?
Well, it was over at Huffington Post, in the last week or so, and it pointed out the banana as a paradigm for our modern ways.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there are some, what would they be, agronomists, biologists,
mm-hmm.
bunch of istatistices,
mm-hmm. scientists.
Mm-hmm. Those guys, it's only a theory. keep open mind.
Okay, pressing on with the bananas.
There's a possibility. Well, let's just put it this way. Priscilla Presley.
Uh-huh.
She's just getting ready to show her brand new twins. And there is a possibility that in her lifetime, Miss Kate, they will not get to eat a peanut butter and banana and mayonnaise sandwich like their late great granddaddy the king.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a blight, some sort of pathogen.
Oh, yes, I've talked about that before.
Yeah, that attacks the bananas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What we were talking about, you and I, was the pathogen that's attacking the chocolate.
Yes, but the banana, okay, maybe I was just reading this and left it laying there. Yeah.
But there's no cure. It's like banana plague. And because these bananas have been so selectively bred over the years.
Yeah.
for size and for, you know. Mm-hmm. See, we think we know what a banana tastes like.
Oh, hell no. Oh, no way. No way. Uh-uh.
That's like saying, because we can't grow bananas here. You know, that's like saying that going to the grocery store and buying one of those little baseball-sized, vaguely pink things that's all icky on the inside and is sold as a tomato mm-hmm. makes us know what a tomato tastes like.
Right.
When anybody who's ever raised two or three Brandywine vines in the summertime knows that's what a tomato tastes like.
As long as they don't get hailed out, right?
Well, there's that.
there's always the weather.
But what I'm getting at is we don't know what a banana tastes like because those things have been bred over generations to be able to grow fast, grow big, be picked greener than grass, and to sort of ripen on the long boat ride.
That's right. And sometimes they have spiders, tarantulas in them, so, you know, if you're going to pick those banana bunches up, you need to be careful that there's no...
Deadly tarantula, daylight come and we don't... Yeah.
There is some scientific research, though, that there are other breeds of bananas grown in other places that we might not run out of bananas, and there are people who are growing bananas that aren't that same ones that are subject to the blight, so we... Priscilla's babies may get sandwiches on white bread. That we're sliding into food porn here. my Dixie for
well, yeah. Look, it happens. It's what it. Yeah, I'm lucky in that I don't watch so much TV anymore because I was forever looking at the boy. Go get me a peanut butter and banana with mayonnaise sandwich and the Elvis gun. I'm a shooting the TV again.
I thought about that today was my friend's birthday, and so every place we had a couple of staff meetings, and everywhere we went, they had a birthday celebration, and, of course, it was food. And I walked into the first office this morning and with her, and they had the staff meeting all set up, and there was a king cake on the table, and I thought,
Oh, my. We are getting to that time of year, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. It's carnival time. And anyway, so there's the king cake. And I thought, yeah, that's cool. And there was a crock pot sitting on the floor. And I didn't, it just had something vaguely pale in it. And I just thought, oh, well, whatever. And,
grits? No.
During the meeting, yeah. During the meeting, the supervisor of that office just rudely, just gets up and starts cutting the damn cake right in the middle of my friend trying to do this staff meeting. I mean, it was just so freaking rude. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, I thought, just sit back here and don't say anything.
Didn't have no raisin.
Don't be judgmental. You don't have any idea what goes on in this culture.
No. I can tell you that's just a sign of being absolutely without raisin. Wasn't raised right.
And so then she reaches over with this ladle, with this plate, and I thought she was going to put some kind of frosting or something on the king cake. And it smelled kind of strange. And then I heard somebody say something about grits. And
no.
She didn't put it on the cake, no. She just put it in the plate, and she spooned it up for a couple of other people. And I just sat in the back of the room. Nobody offered me anything, and I didn't ask, and I thought, So anyway, on the way after the meeting, I said, what were the grit? I mean, what was that in the pot? She said, grits. And I said, well, they had stuff in them. What? She said, oh, I don't know, a little bit of Rotel and some sausage. They were really good. And I thought,
damn.
Oh, damn. Glorified grits for staff meeting. With
and you missed
cake.
Them.
No, hell no. I didn't want. I didn't. Ooh. No, I didn't.
It just makes your arteries hurt thinking about it.
It kind of does, yeah. And then another person in the office in Pascagoula asked about what to get her for her birthday, and did she like chocolate? What kind of cake would she like? And I said, well, she doesn't really eat cake, but I know she likes sweet potato pie. So I'm expecting. So she, oh good, I can do that. So she, I'm expecting like this. The grandma that gave me the pie. Last year I expected sweet potato pie, and I bit into it, and it tasted like pecan pie. Oh, my God. It was icky. I mean, it was so sweet. And they said, well, this tastes a little bit like chess pie, don't it? And I said, what's chess pie? Oh, I don't know. I said, what's it taste? Well, it tastes less like this. I said, oh.
No, wait, stop.
I'm stopped.
You don't know what chess pie is.
I don't know what chess pie is, but if it tastes like that, it tastes like pecan pie, and I don't like it.
We got work to do.
I know.
We'll get you to the pecan pie.
Ooh, no, you won't. Never since I was a little bitty kid, all my relatives and all my relations made pecan pie. I hate pecan pie. Ooh, hurts my teeth. Ooky poo.
Well, it is sweet. Chess pie, however.
Okay, what's chess pie?
It's like an 18th century urban myth. And I think it centers on George Washington.
Okay.
I wish I was kidding.
It's
this custardy kind of thing. In fact, we used to have it on our school lunch plates when I was a little, when I was just a wee little redneck.
Mm-hmm.
On our school lunch plates back when the lunch ladies actually made lunches in schools.
Yeah, right.
Instead of sending, downer beef stew kind of stuff.
Yep,
right.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. That's the food anti-porn part of the program.
Yeah, porn's over.
But it's this thick custardy, and it's rich, and it's, you can just tell it's just very eggy.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing in it. It's not like there's coconut in it or anything. It's just, and it's baked, and it sets up, and the legend that I was told goes with chess pie, chesspie,
mm-hmm.
is that, at one point in time, and I mean no one any disrespect in any of this, at one point in time, George Washington's cook came to him and said, Marse George, what you want for dinner? And he told her, and she said, Marse George, what you want for dessert? And he said, oh, just pie.
Just pie.
And she went back to the kitchen, and no chef worth his or her salt will admit to not knowing what it is. And she concocted this pie.
It's just pie.
And called it, and it was chess pie, because that is what she heard. Now, this is all probably, like I said, 18th century urban myth.
I love it.
Or, I don't know, agrarian society, Virginia Tidewater myth is probably more accurate.
The Commonwealth.
Old Dominion.
They talk funny up there, too. Oh, I love it. Now I know something that table didn't know, because they didn't know shit all what chess pie was. Now I can tell them.
Well, I'd Snopes that or something first, but that's the story I was told as a
I don't care. I
wee
like
little
it.
Redneck.
Consider the source, yeah. So, and since this is, it's getting to the top of the hour, and I really got to haul out of here, and everybody else who's got to go to dinner, I have to,
supper.
I have a supper. Right, go to supper.
Just try to do my little.
I know, I always call it supper. I don't know why I slipped and said dinner.
Dinner's at noon.
Sure is. Because it's prayer meeting night, I did something today that I really wanted to share on prayer meeting.
Okie doke.
I'm such a bitch. That's a term of endearment. The woman who got up with no raisin and cut the pie and cut the cake and dipped the grits this morning was talking about her cruise that she took last month. And the Mayan ruins were just so beautiful. It was just so awesome to stand there and see those ruins. And she's going on and on about the ruins. And she said, and I picked up a rock and brought it home. And I said, you what? Well, it was just a little rock. And I said, send it back. Why? And I said, you do not pick up artifacts, nor stone, nor dirt, nor plants from sacred sites. People have been known to... That racks up some really bad karma. For instance, if you pick up a rocks off of the volcanoes in Hawaii, they really, really get you. People have been known to come home and have all kinds of bad luck and just say, okay, I believe it, and they send the rock back. And you just send it whatever country you were in, send it back to the embassy or send it back to the tourist place or send it back to the airplane company that you flew. Send the rock back. Well, it was just a little rock. And I said, you are really, really, and then other people were kind of agreeing with me at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Who were more. One was ex-military, and the other one was my friend. They said, "Yeah, I've heard that. I read stories about." I said, "Send the rock back. It's not a. You can send it back anonymously. It's okay, but just get rid of the rock." And she said, "Well, by this time I'm trying to not."
Hey, sister, ever heard of the Hope Diamond?
Yes, I have.
No, you, but I mean, have you ever heard of the Hope Diamond? Nothing good happens to the people who have the Hope Diamond.
No, she wouldn't. She's the one with no upbringing that got up and dipped in the middle of the...
Yeah, right.
Okay, so here's what I did. This is prayer meeting. She says, "Well, if I have any bad luck, I'll just pray to Jesus to protect me." And I thought, "You bitch. Oh, you're so ignorant." I said, "Honey... The rock is way older than Jesus."
His daddy made it.
And I got up and walked out. And I thought, I should have let somebody have at least say face or have some recourse to respond. But nobody did. It was just like it stopped.
Hey, look, you give it the two count and then the door opens, all right?
I did. I said, 1, 2, I'm up and out.
And there you go.
And on the way home, I said to my friend, "I will not apologize for what I said, unless I embarrassed you and I was out of line. I'm sorry, but I will not apologize for what I said." She said, "Oh, hell no, that was okay. I was supporting what you said. I believe too." I said, "Okay." So anyway, that's my prayer meeting. I just wanted to explain to that little sister that you pray to Jesus to protect you from the...
Well, but see, isn't that a little bit like Representative Chisholm's little admonishment to the young minds there?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of the cart before the horse, Kate, because if you wait till you have the bad luck's already on you, and praying to Jesus ain't going to do nothing.
That's what I was trying to... Yeah, that was implied, and a couple of people mentioned that. Don't wait until you have the bad luck. And
don't screw your luck first, and because you know what, mm-hmm. It's not bad luck; it's the luck you earn.
Mm-hmm. I said, you know, you're racking up some really bad karma. Just send the rock back. There's no shame in that. You didn't know. You picked up the rock and brought it home. Send it back. But the rock is older than Jesus. So, I needed to call in tonight because seeing the suspended chip above the hard drive and the Freightliner that's not being manufactured anymore and the drapes that are going out a bit and the ships that are all sitting in the port, that's just too big for me to sit on. I just being problematic.
Yes, but that's your job.
There is that. There is that. I'm the least of some of your problems, I bet. I want to be the most.
Oh, sister, you said a mouthful. But the point is so well taken, though. There's an instrumental, it's not an instrumental, it's an actual song that I play from time to time off of an Al Stewart album called Between the Wars, and it's called Dancing into 1939.
Mm.
And it's, I guess I know what I have to play now.
Cool.
But there's that.
Help me out with dance music.
it don't work quite like that, but.
But I can dance to anything. If I had Peter to dance with.
But there's an incredibly fragile society about us.
Mm-hmm.
That we are too entirely disinterested to look for, or to not even to look for, to even so much as notice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And every one of them has a little bit of collapse built in. And it's not dancing into 1939, it's laughing into 1939, but same principle.
Mm-hmm.
And it for want of a nail, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The one little widget that stops the machines.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody notice that now that the elections are over, gasoline's up 12 cents a gallon?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, sucker, go buy some more of that cheap gas.
Don't even get into that. The oil companies have stocked. They've bought the oil at this price at $20 a barrel, and they have filled every available vessel, onshore, offshore, tanks, ships, everything. The capacity for oil storage is, I heard this on the air last night out of an industry publication. Everything is filled to capacity, and what they're going to do is just wait until the prices go up, and then they can start selling the oil again. So in the meantime, we're going to be, yeah. So anyway.
Well, you know, doesn't that, and I know what your opinion is, so doesn't that form an effective trump card for incoming President Obama? You know, you play ball with us, or we'll let you see the $6 gas.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's all been set up. I mean, it's all going to fall over, and everybody's thinking how, well, this is change we can believe in, and it's fallen over. And I just wish, you know, like, just get some canned goods on the shelf and buy some extra socks and underwear and some new jeans and get some extra good shoes, you know, because your shoes wear out. There's nobody to, and then what are you going to do when the little suspension thing over the hard drive can't read the hard drive anymore? I don't know. I'm just being problematic, but I didn't want to mess up prayer meeting. But I have.
Oh, you didn't. You didn't. This all plays in nicely. And you know, now, since you're down there, keep an eye out for the brother Chisholm.
Mm-hmm.
Would
yeah.
you please?
Yes, I'll do a follow up on the story. It's like I don't have enough to do, but anyway.
Yeah, because they, you know, them youngins, them 10th grade biology students, they don't have enough parental guidance.
Some youngster tonight, 28 years old, he's kind of the clown of the office, and he was joking about, well, yes, and he's about his personality, and he said, and I have the body of a Greek god. He doesn't, by the way. The body of a Greek god, and I said, Poseidon. And he goes, ooh, cake, you're so bad. I thought, oh, shit, it was Poseidon Greek? I don't remember.
Poseidon. You're,
was Greek? Okay.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to run it up the flagpole. And
I'm going to play two tunes after this, just because they sort of work. They work in harmony, just like our phone calls.
You and I just wing it, and we always seem to enjoy the feathers. So I've got the big, largest moon in the year shining in my skylight in southern Mississippi. So I'm heading off to bed in a little bit. Damn, it's cold down here.
How cold is it?
Oh, it's probably only going to be 20 tonight.
That's bone chilling down there.
Whew, buddy, I'm telling you.
Well, I got a call from my sister a week or so ago. It was 72 degrees in Mobile, and the azaleas budding.
Yeah,
so much for the azalea buds.
Well, yeah, we've got pretty little purple buds right along the fence, and they're just going to get so cold that I don't want to cover them up because they're actually weeds, but I love them. So anyway, I'm going to move over and let somebody else talk, and I'm just going to just hang up here.
All right. So, well, Kate, thank you very kindly. And
thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for making it. And you know, thank you for not reaching across for your portion of grits and king cake.
Well, yeah, because now you just think you got more educating to do for me, right?
I mean, No. I think that's a little bronze star.
Oh, thank you. I just
you clearly raised Ryder than she was. And you ain't even from around here.
Well, all I would have needed to do for it to be effective for me was just to pull my shirt away from my waist and pour the grits right down my hips and, you know, put the king cake in my back pocket because it sticks on my ass, you know.
Strap on king cake.
I can't. I can't afford that kind of, you know, and why chip away at unhealthiness, you know. I mean, it's just, that's too goofy. You know, it's whatever. Life's
exactly.
too short. But today was a good enough day to be the last, so there you go. So anyway, on with prayer meeting, and I'm out of here.
All right, Sister Kate, thank you for your report from the mission field.
Oh, you're so welcome, Brother Bob. Bye.
God bless.
God love you. And bless your heart.
And bless her. Bless her heart. She just can't help it. She ain't from around here. So we'll take a little break. And, yeah, this ain't exactly prayer meeting music, but in light of the topic, Hallie, I think this meant two tunes from this album that I think you will perhaps get something out of. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. It's prayer meeting, brother and sister, and light up the phones. It's your little electronical common sense confessional. It is the horn.
Party hat and satin dress, silver paper curled in a long black hair, tapping one small elegant shoe in time. Oh, the way she plays with him, smile at one and dance with another. Pretty soon they're forming up a line. And she's laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, the party draws them in. It breathes and moves to a life that's all in its arms, it's gathering all time. From the dark, he watches her moving in and out of the bobbing crowd. If she even notices, she gives no sign. And she's laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, laughing, laughing into 1939. But tonight is New Year's Eve. Uncork your spirits and welcome it in. Who knows what it's got up its sleeve? Can't wait for it all to begin. Stand by the gun with the purple balloon. Look in her eyes, just lights up the room. In the corner of her smile, she'll be seeing you soon. Under a mistletoe moon. Balcony. Come the king and queen, and the crowd go wild. He's a little bit nervous, but that's just fine. And they're laughing, laughing into 1939. Oh, laughing. Laughing into 1939. The sun is high,
Looking out, I see the emptiness beyond the jetty. Seagulls raining like confetti on the water. Sea and sky come together in a hazy kiss out on the ocean. Europe seems a foreign notion, hardly thought of. And would you leave your modern world behind? I know who I am, riding on my sampan. I know who I am, riding on my sampan. In the shade stands a farmer in a floppy hat and linen suit. Beneath his ancient leather boots, the ground is straining. Far away, figures bend to tap the endless seas of rubber trees, to coat the wheels of Paris taxis where it's raining. And would you leave your melting world behind? I know who I am, riding on my sampan. I know who I am, riding on my sampan.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are, brethren and sister, and right here in the Cathedral of Common Sense on this prayer meeting Wednesday. And I hope you enjoy the little musical interlude. Sometimes you just have to catch your breath a little bit. Not like I did, you know, six breaks an hour or anything. I guess those patent baldness remedies come in handy sometimes. But it's okay. It's what I do to make conversation radio happen. What you do to make conversation radio happen, especially on a Wednesday night, here in the Cathedral of Common Sense, is pick up the phone and dial 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your own nickel. Save us a little bit of change, 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bobkincaid@gmail.com or bob@headonradio.com. You pick. It's just that easy. You can follow on Twitter. And as soon as I figure out how to give you something to follow, you can sign up on Facebook, as I mentioned, or MySpace. We're just trying to get all over creation with all this social networking. The Horn has pages, standalone pages for the whole network at MySpace and Facebook, as I mentioned. But right now, enough of the waiting. The waiting is over. Let's go back to the phones. Or not. Darn it. Oh, well, these things happen. I wanted to point something out to you, if I can find it. This is a really, really stupid piece of what passes for video journalism. And it has to do with Barack Obama and Michelle Obama having had their photograph taken. No, I'm not kidding. That's where we are. It's pitiable. God damn it. Okay. I will eventually find this thing. I found two pieces of stupid reporting, really, really dumb reporting at CNN today. And it's absolutely stunning. Listen, here's a headline. Teen sends 14,528 texts in 1 month. Do you see why there's a horn now? Don't worry, I'm not going to do that story. That's on the headlines page. That's not even down there in the more news section. That's headline material at CNN. That's what the for-profit only media likes to bring you. Oprah gushes over Kate Winslet's breasts.
What, Edith?
And then just one after another. there seems to be no end to it. And pontificating at a level that is positively obscene.
Ooh.
I mean, there's holier than thou, and then there's, wow, holier than thou. This is one of those. I didn't know about this because I don't follow this kind of trash in the news. With the banner underneath, this is from CNN's Prime News. The banner says, 22-year-old wants money for school. A college student is auctioning off her virginity to pay for school, Prime News reports. No, really, the irony is apparently lost on them, too. Prime News reports. And I really could not care any less whatsoever about the content of this piece. But it's the smarmy, self-righteous hypocrisy of the hosts. Just listen.
The price on virginity, and apparently it's about $3.7 million. A few months ago, we did tell you. Yes, Mike. We told you about this woman, 22-year-old Natalie Dillon. She says she's auctioning off her virginity to pay for her education. Mm-hmm. She's getting her master's. Apparently, supposedly, the bidding is in the millions now. She claims that she's gotten offers from 10,000 men. Guess she's proud of that.
Wait, stop. Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Guess she's proud of that. Well, here, the snarkiness moment from the horn. I guess you couldn't get $3.7 million for your virginity, sister. Guess she's proud of that. But it doesn't end there. This is, really, this is news. This is what goes down. Millions of people, let's watch the news, Mabel. How about that? That girl there is selling her virginity for $3.7 million. Now, Emery, you know you ain't got no $3.7 million, so you just quit looking at the TV that way. But let's continue.
In Nevada, where prostitution is legal, apparently her sister paid for her education by being a hooker.
So the sister I'm going to say it. Apparently
a hooker.
Great.
Apparently.
And her sister was a role model. I'm going to say it. A hooker. You know, when people behave like that on the air, you have to wonder what goes on when the lights go out. You just can't not.
So $3.7 million is where things stand right now.
Yeah, and how about that as a kicker? I'm looking at one of your notes here, and I remember doing the story that mm-hmm. she wants to have a career in marriage and family therapy.
That's what she says.
Yeah, your clients are going to say.
That's what she says, bitch. This is just, now wait, let's back up just a hair. Make sure we get all the snark from the guy in the white shirt and tie.
Find out that, and they're really going to want to go to you when you lost your virginity for millions.
Yes.
Great.
Am I just missing something? What is it that makes the fact that this woman chooses to do with her body as she pleases, what is it about that disqualifies her from being a marriage and family counselor? She's not married, and she doesn't have a family. She's a, virgin. And I feel halfway icky for even talking about this, but I'm not talking about this in the context of whether the story, whether it's got any sort of existential meaning of its own. I'm talking about this in the context of who in the holy lets that get on air? Who writes that drivel? And, I mean, is there some sort of the director or producer behind the microphone that goes into the ear? No, I need you to be a little more snarky. Come on, catty. Get the claws out, sister. Come on, be catty. Yeah, I guess it's unfair. It's tough to come up with 24 hours of content, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But actually, if the truth be known, we are at a fairly news-rich point in time. If dealing with the news is what you're into. On the other hand, I think it's safe to say that this inaugural is bringing out the worst in news organizations as well. This is the other thing that I mentioned. This is the story about Barack and Michelle get a picture taken. Check this out.
Long before they were America's first couple, some 12 years ago, Barack and Michelle Obama posed for photographer Mariana Cook, who was on a quest to find out about relationships in America.
Was he wearing any of them Muslim clothes? Sorry.
For her book, Couples.
This is the camera that you used to shoot the Obamas.
It's a Hasselblad 200.
Did you just get that exchange? This is the camera that you used to shoot that photo? It's a Hasselblad. For those of you scoring at home, a Hasselblad is an extremely expensive camera. That you probably know that. It's a Hasselblad. This is the camera? And is this the very tripod that the camera sat on when you took a picture? Oh, Jesus.
Quarter.
Cook, who has shot the likes of playwright Lillian Hellman and former French President François Mitterrand, says she was struck by the low-key couple.
They talked easily together. There was no tension between them.
He is smiling a little bit. His face is more open. She's a little bit more serious.
Okay. So apparently body language analysis has crept over from Falafel Boy Bill O'Reilly into CNN. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. He's clearly more open, you see.
They're people. They each have their own minds and...
Really? Newsflash, Michelle Obama has her own mind. This just in, Barack Obama has his own mind, too. Film at 11. This is your source for America's news. This is CNN.
Feelings, and they're very different. And yet, from the body language, you can see how comfortable they are together. I mean, she's leaning into him. She's resting her hands on his knee. His hands are open and entirely relaxed.
This is a portrait? Now, I don't know if there's anybody in the audience who has ever shot portraiture, but as a portrait photographer, I mean... Annie Leibovitz, others come to mind. Don't you work with your subjects, or do you just say, well, flop out there on the couch, and I'm just going to shoot whatever happens?
You haven't changed, really.
Cook says she can't remember why she chose the Obamas, just that many of the couples were referred by word of mouth.
So at the time, he was a lawyer and a writer, and I guess if I'd been told that he was going to be president of the United States one day, I would have paid more attention. But
she still got the picture. It's obvious she was paying attention.
In fact, the Obamas never made it into the book, though a more controversial couple whose name surfaced during the 2008 campaign.
Wait for it. This is too good.
Campaign did.
Oh, and Bill Ayers. Look at that.
Son of a biscuit eater, Bill Ayers. Quick, let me check in the chat room. Yeah, 5 days before the inaugural, and CNN comes up with what may very well be the single most oblique way to drag William Ayers back into the public. I ain't afraid of no FCC. It's out of respect for you that I don't engage in power swearing. It really is.
They made the book.
They made the book.
Bill Ayers made the book.
The photo, which...
Bill Ayers? You mean the terrorist Bill Ayers who tried to bomb our Pentagon? I really don't feel any better after that, but damn, I had to do something. I ain't got no rubber brick.
appears in this week's New Yorker magazine was accompanied by interviews the photographer did with the couple, married 4 years.
There's a strong possibility that Barack will pursue a political career, although it's unclear.
Yeah. Cook has shot more than 400 portraits since the Obama photo shoot, but says something in him stood out even then.
He really had a vision of what this country needed. There's a depth to him. You can see it in a...
Now, stop it! I guess, because it was like 45 seconds ago, that she, I guess I would have paid more attention if I'd known he was going to be president of the United States. And then it's, well, he really had a kind of vision to him. Pick one, please.
His eyes.
Deborah Feyerick, CNN.
Hopefully soon out of work. You can almost hear what happens in the newsroom, can't you? All right, Deborah, let's see. John King's got the White House, and Wolf will be holding down the studio for one more day. Deborah Feyerick, go out and get us a hot package on that 12-year-old black and white photograph that was never published of Barack Obama that the New Yorkers got. See if maybe they're doing an get a look at the picture, Deborah Feyerick. See if they're doing a terrorist fist jab, or maybe if maybe back then Michelle had that Angela Davis hairdo that we featured in that cartoon on the front cover a few months back. Get right on it, Deborah. Yes, boss. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, at least. To someone who actually takes seriously the notion of the Fourth Estate as it is embodied in the First Amendment. What? There's something about estates in the First Amendment? I thought that only had to do with the making sure that everybody could go to church whenever they had to, or wanted to, sorry. Mother McCree. So that, you know, that's the, oh, no, I'm so not going to play Oprah gushing over Kate Winslet's breasts. Because that sounds like pornography, doesn't it? That sounds like a money shot when you get right down to it. Kids, don't ask Mommy and Daddy what a money shot is, okay, please? Now, way down below... Because we just do this from time to time, and it's always valuable. Way down below, Bergen, why Osama bin Laden is speaking out, and Apple's Jobs takes medical leave, slums raised, poor thrown into streets, there's a story, Fantasy Island actor dead at 88, fugitive pilot was near death, official says. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm not very good at this. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6. Sixth on the CNN hit parade at this hour. A little story that is slugged court orders White House to preserve emails. A federal judge has ordered... This is from CNN. A federal judge has ordered the Bush White House to preserve its emails just days before a new administration takes over. The court's preservation notice Wednesday stems from an ongoing lawsuit by private groups over allegedly missing electronic messages. But you follow the horn, and you've heard Guy James talk about this. You've heard Peter Godbold talk about this. You've heard Mark Levine talk about this. You've heard John Fox talk about this. You've heard me talk about this. So you know about this. Oh, it's been a thorny legal and political issue for outgoing Bush officials. How? Just asking, how has it been thorny? At what point in time did anybody connected with this? Was Harriet Myers subpoenaed and showed up to testify about this? And I missed it? Or how about Karl Rove? You know, he was at the center of this. And, of course, this was the whole email system that was put up by the guy who died in a small plane a couple of weeks ago. Unless I'm mistaken, which it's possible I could be. remember, because the Bush administration refused to use the White House email server and instead used the RNC server, which was in and of itself a violation of the law. And to the extent that a protein-laced stain on a blue dress was grounds for impeachment, one would think that a flagrant violation of law such as this might have been as well, but let's not ask questions, hard questions like that, of people like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, please, for God's sakes, no. It hasn't been a thorny legal and political issue for outgoing Bush officials. They went to the courts like they always have for 8 long years. 8 years. No kidding. 8 years of at the courts and, moreover, at the people of the United States. So U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy instructed officials. No, he didn't instruct. That's journalism writing there. That's not English. That's journalism writing. It should read U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy ordered officials to search all White House workstations and to collect and preserve all emails sent or received. I'm guessing U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy may not be the most tech savvy. All White House workstations. Well, gee, Judge, we couldn't do it. We would have loved to have complied with your order, but, you know, I mean, you gave this thing down 5 days before the inauguration, and shoot, we've already pulled all the hard drives, and they're at the bottom of the Potomac. Executive office personnel were also ordered to surrender any email from that 31-month period. You know, you almost kind of wonder if perhaps there's some granddaughter or grandniece or some such of Rosemary Woods that belongs to one of those workstations. Gosh, Your Honor, we would have loved to have done that. Just missed it by that much. Holy smokes. But like I said, it's been 8 years. And it's 8 years that began with George W. Bush on a 4th of July celebration in 2001 in, I believe, Philadelphia, where the guy stepped out. I think you can find this at BartCop if you search the archives back that far. 4th of July celebration, I think, 2001, Philadelphia, rope line. Guy shakes Bush's hand and says, "I think you're a terrible president." And George looks at him and says, "Who cares what you think?" Yeah, who cares what you think? You gotta give the little pig-eyed, jug-eared weasel this much. He's consistent.
How do you feel? I know that you had that kind of wild press conference yesterday, but how do you feel personally when you see the ratings and the polls and have you at 25-30%?
I don't give a darn.
Doesn't
I feel the same way when they had me at 90+.
Did you notice the mumble? Words mean things. So do attitudes, and if we were paying attention to that video report of the day Barack Obama had a photograph taken, we know that body language matters. Well, you see, he's very open. He's got his arm across the couch, and she's got her hands on his knees, and that just means they love each other to pieces. Well, verbal mannerisms matter as well.
Percent.
I don't give a darn. I feel the same way when they had me at 90+.
The same.
Yeah, look, these opinion polls are nothing but a shot of yesterday's news. Of course.
That's the new talking point. That's the new phrase they taught Incurious George the Monkey in the last day or two, because he trotted that one out at the press conference as well, didn't he? There's nothing more than, you know, a shot of yesterday's news. Well, George, yesterday's news is the news. Because we can't do tomorrow's news except in maybe the weird little universe where the loyal Bushies live, where they create their own reality.
Of course, the opinion polls aren't going to be high when the economy's in the tank. I'm the president.
I'm the president, and the economy's in the tank. But somehow there's still no, you know, there's no nexus between those two things for him. Lord, do you remember when that oxymoron Flush Flimball went on and on and on about the Clinton economy was a direct result of the economic policies of the Reagan years? Well, now, of course, if you're following this stuff, the economy being in the tank now is a direct and proximate result of the excesses and the regulations and all them evil Democrat things that they did when that sex pervert was in the office. Yeah.
In a time of tough economic conditions, and you know, people aren't happy with the economy, and neither am I. And so you cannot make decisions based upon, you know, popularity polls. I have people come to me and say, "You get out of Iraq because you're making us unpopular." And I said, "Well, pal, you must not know what it means to be the commander-in-chief. If the military thinks you're making decisions based upon a Gallup poll, they're not going to follow a commander-in-chief. And secondly, you must not have met with those whose kids died in Iraq. If you think that I'm going to say to a mother, your son's honor is not going to be, your son's sacrifice is not going to be honored because of my political standing, then you don't understand George W. Bush."
Yeah, yours. Flipping us off all the way to Marine One. God Almighty. It is kind of hard to stomach, isn't it? But I guess George was feeling his oats. Because he was going to have somebody really, really special for lunch. Mm-hmm. Flush Flimball's little minion who was on the air for him yesterday, you may have already heard this on Guy James' show. If I'm covering this territory again, I hope it's okay. But the little minion said the man with half his brain tied behind his back and the other half up his rear end, said that Flush had done gone to Washington, D.C. for a secret meeting and tried to make it sound like it was going to be a meeting with Barack Obama. But it wasn't. No. It was a meeting with Dear Leader, and it was really, really special.
So yesterday morning, I arise early and head to the airport, and I fly up to Washington, D.C. I get to the White House at 11 o'clock, the luncheon with the president scheduled at 12 noon, from 12 noon to 1 o'clock, because at 1:05 he's got to go to the East Room for the Presidential Medal of Freedom ceremony.
You know, the Presidential Medal of Freedom ceremony where they gave one of those to John Howard? Because that was they had to debase a Presidential Medal of Freedom so as to get John Howard into Blair House to keep, you know, those ones out of Blair House so that those ones as young'uns. Jesus Christ.
I arrived at 11 o'clock, as they asked me to, in case the schedule was moving faster.
Well, wait a minute, Flush. Is it a schedule or a schedule, you insincere bastard?
I don't want the president to have downtime, so if you're waiting to meet with the president, you're always there early in case his schedule changes.
Must be scheduled.
They call me into the Oval Office at 11:45. We went in, had some pictures, as is always the case. Ed Gillespie, one of the president's advisors, was there, posed for the pictures, so forth. The president said,
"Let's go eat." Ed Gillespie.
President said, "Let's go eat." The day before, on Monday, I had been faxed to me the menu from the White House mess. And they'd asked me to choose what I wanted from the menu.
Oh, brother, you said a mouthful. The White House mess. We've been feeling that way for 8 years, haven't we, gang? Yeah.
and you for lunch a day in advance. So I looked at the menu, and I ordered salmon over rice and a side salad with some ranch dressing. We get into the president's private dining
room. Because he's a man of the people. But wait.
Dining room off the Oval Office, and in front of every place, there are three of them, and there's Ed Gillespie and the president and me. There's a cheese and cracker tray, a substantial cheese and cracker tray that they had not
told. Yeah, not just any pissant cheese and cracker tray. It was a substantial cheese and cracker tray. And my friends, I'm telling you, I ate every last damned one of them. I slapped the president's hand when he reached for it. That's enough of that.
Only would be there. The president had not ordered. He ordered lunch, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And he told the steward, I want red jelly. Don't give me that purple jelly. I want red jelly.
This guy's the water carrier. Tell me no. I'm willing to believe anything on earth about George Bush. But really, that sort of slides under the sewer culvert, doesn't it? The culvert of stupidity. And don't bring me that. I want the red jelly, not the purple jelly. I want the red. Red? Strawberry? Preserves? Jam? Rhubarb? Cherry? Apple's kind of golden. Yeah, I want the red jelly, not the purple. George, just curious, what is it about the purple that you... It tastes like purpleness. I've never cared much for purple. You know, that's one of them colors that the Homer sectionals like to use, and I'm boycotting purpleness. Well, it wasn't no Prince music, neither. What we're playing here, just to remind you, is $40 million a year radio.
Ed Gillespie had a salad, a large salad.
I just love Rush when he gets all common man and starts telling us about the president's peanut butter and jelly sandwich and what kind of salad Ed Gillespie done had. That Rush, I tell you what. He reinvented radio, didn't he? He did. He reinvented radio. There had never been radio that talked about what kind of salads Ed Gillespie's had before Rush come along.
So shortly thereafter, here came my salmon. Here came my side salad and an order of French fries.
Well, that's pretty damn poor service, isn't it? Don't you get the salad before you get the entree, even if it's lunch? Anybody else ever worked in a restaurant? But they didn't want to upstage the president, so everybody had to get their food at the same time so that George could have his sandwich with the red jelly, not the purple.
Well, I did not order, and the president's got his little peanut butter and jelly sandwich there, and Gillespie's looking at his salad. The president looks at me and says, Hey, Limbaugh, we don't have all that much time to eat here. This is going to be a quick meeting. And I said, I didn't order all this, but I'm happy to have it here. Then I got my napkin out.
But wait, he did order all that. He ordered the salmon over rice and the salad. And the fries. And as a big guy who likes to eat in my own right, this is all webcammed, and you can tell that Flush really did order the salmon over the rice with the fries and the side salad.
And I put my napkin on. I was getting ready to put the napkin on. And unbeknownst to me, a corner of my napkin dipped into the bowl of ranch dressing.
Damn! Breaking news! This guy should be working for CNN over there putting up those headlines about Oprah Winfrey gushing over the Kate Winslet's breastises.
The president looked at me with horror on his face. Limbaugh, you're going to ruin your blue suit. This is the White House. Shape up, man. And I didn't know what he was talking about. He said, you got salad dressing all over your napkin.
Now I got to do like I done with the deets and take you out and brand you with a hot coat hanger.
So I'm sitting there. I'm laughing, and everybody's laughing. So we went and had lunch.
For the love of God, at what? I mean, at what? This isn't funny. This is sad. This is, I don't know, this kind of has the air of all the little minions lighting cigarettes after Eva Braun and Hitler had committed suicide, doesn't it?
It was off the record. This was not, I mean, some of these people that have been invited up here the last week in this are going in for exit interviews where the president gives them a lowdown and things that he's done that he wants remembered and so forth. This was a friendly thing. It was mostly, well, it was, for all intents and purposes, all the policy stuff was all off the record. And with 10 minutes left in lunch, the door opens and the stewards, three stewards walk in with a little chocolate birthday cake that has four candles in it, and they're lighted. And I'm looking at, and there's a little chocolate microphone on the plate with the...
Were there any little chocolate, were there any, like, little chocolate OxyContins or anything there? I mean, that's what I'd put on a cake for Rush. Or he'd probably prefer the real ones if it can't be known.
With the chocolate birthday cake. And I'm my mouth falls open, and I'm just in stunned just...
Happy birthday, Puzzle Gut. Happy birthday, Puzzle Gut. Happy birthday, you lying Puzzle Gut. Happy birthday, Flush Flimball. See, that's the kind of kidding we do around the White House.
Believe, but I'm trying to act cool. You know, I'm trying to, like, this is no big deal. This happens to me all the time. Yeah, ranch dressing on the napkin. I'm trying to act cool here like this is...
What the hell happens to you if you're going down the road and this is what you're listening to? I mean, do you, like, and you get all narcoleptic and nod off, and the next thing you know, they're squalling tires and you've done a phone poll? I kid you not. This is what they're down to.
This is all no big deal. By the way, how many people would admit to you that they dip their napkin in ranch dressing at lunch at the White House? That's how secure of myself I am. I didn't know I had done it. But it
how many, my friends, how many people would admit to you that they sent their maid out with $30,000 in a cigar box to buy enough hillbilly heroin to tranquilize a whole holler? That's how secure I am in myself. And then I went to Arizona and talked to the same horsies that Cindy McCain went and talked to when she had her little dope problem.
It was just funny the way, hey, Limbaugh, you're going to ruin your suit. This is the White House, man. Shape up. So anyway.
Jiminy Christmas, the Flush Flimball has jumped the damn shark. This is like Thanksgiving with your crazy old liquored up uncle. I mean, what? He told the George Bush story twice in that? In the space of 2.5 minutes? The whole damn clip's only 4 minutes and 39 seconds long. And he manages to tell the same piece of dialogue? Hey, my friends, did I ever tell you about the time I dipped the napkin in the ranch dressing at the White House? Yeah, Uncle Rush, you did. Enough of this idiot. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Gonzo greetings. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, Spike, what's happening, man?
Not much. Just waiting for the big heat wave to roll in.
Oh, the one that'll raise the temperatures into single digits?
Yeah. There's a good chance our high of the day is going to be 3 on Friday, so it isn't living around here until you...
Ooh-wee, get out the copper tone.
So, yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. But I'm just glad I don't have to buy oil heat anymore. When I used to live in Easton at the house, I get oil heat, so... Not like the electric's any better, but at least, you know, it's a little bit of less hassle than having oil heat when it gets cold like that. So between the expense and the maintenance and all that.
Oh, no kidding. And you're not, y'all aren't getting any of that Hugo Chavez heating oil either.
No. That was big in this area not too long, like when that was going on. That was basically the majority of the old people in Pennsylvania were getting Hugo Chavez oil, so. Yeah, that's kind of gone sour, but, well, yeah, what do you expect? But, the final, it's the final week, and barring some unforeseen, God knows, disaster, it's the final week. Finally,
are you like me, Spike? I want to. It's got to be. He's got to leave. He's just got to leave. But there is there like one little atomic particle in your being that's going, he don't want to go. He'll find a way to try to stay.
No, I think he's such a blow off. I think I'm surprised he couldn't find a loophole to get him out early. I guess the bigger fear was even he was afraid of Cheney in charge. But
you can't leave.
But yeah, I mean, seriously.
You know, I asked that the other night. You may not have been listening, but I asked that question the other night, Spike. Who has been Cheney's Renfield? And it was there in front of us all along. George Bush is Renfield to Cheney's Dracula. George just down there eating his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches like Renfield ate his bugs.
Whew. Yeah, well, I'm sure George will be making appearances at baseball games, so... You know, we'll see how we'll see what happens after 10 years, because I recently heard apparently starting with him, there's only 10 year of Secret Service protection. So for his sake, private security should better work. But there might be people angrier than the shoe guy coming along. So they could be even more infamy to come. I'm sure he. I don't think he fathoms just how much he's enraged some people around the world.
You think the Secret Service will be scanning people in mid-January as George sneaks out the back door scanning for shoes?
You know,
because I mean, you know, one of them big old Red Wings or one of those, you know, real healthy cold weather boots. Well, that sucker could hurt, especially if it had a steel toe.
Yeah, well. They weren't paying. They weren't really paying much attention in Iraq on their detail there. So I think in a way, actually, he's actually become such an embarrassment. Even those people are kind of not too worried about him. I don't know. That was the prime minister of Iraq's security detail that stopped that guy. It wasn't the Secret Service, which just makes me wonder. You know.
Yeah.
You know, what?
No, I know what it makes you wonder, and it doesn't do me any good either.
No, I'm not an advocate of that at all. That's
no.
Thing. But, you know, if you just look at American history, there's the sad reality of the frequency that's happened over the years. So maybe it explains our violent tendencies in other ways. I'm not sure, but, yeah, so. Could be a scary ride, but I'm just glad his deciding will be coming to an end as of the 20th.
Yeah, well, I think we just saw the future of or heard the future of George W. Bush. The extent of his deciding is going to be whether he wants the red jelly or the purple jelly.
Yeah, but by the way, with that story of Rush Limbaugh, I have to wonder one thing. I called during some of it, so maybe I missed it. Did he like also not only get on his napkin, did he like get on his pants and he's trying to explain some stain and call, you know, use the salad dressing as an excuse?
Oh!
Yeah, wouldn't he put that in his lap?
It is the White House. It's the place that Jimmy Jeff Ganny Guck. And let's pause with only 5 days remaining in the Bush administration, Spike, to remember Jimmy. Jeff Gannon Guckert, hot military stud for you, who had a pass key to the side entrance of the White House, just kind of like Monica did. And let's remember him and wonder, you know, it was a domestic flight, so Flush wasn't likely to be searched. You got to wonder if he traveled with his illicit bottle of Viagra.
Yeah. But he got busted at the airport with not his name on the prescription. Yeah, you have to think of these things when you think of Russia.
I hate where my mind takes me, Spike. Honest to goodness, I do.
I saw his kind all the time when I used to live in downtown Easton. The police call him Johns. You could see them.
Yeah, they call him that here, too.
Yeah, he comes in about happy hour through, I guess, the 5 a.m. So, you know, good 12 hours in Easton, you could find them out looking for God knows what.
A peanut butter and jelly sandwich with the red jelly and not the purple? That, yeah, no.
It's certainly chunky peanut butter.
Yeah, ranch dressing.
And some bacon.
You're putting. Yeah, you have no idea how many people were putting off their supper right now, Spike.
That's why you shouldn't eat supper and listen to the radio at the same time. You never know what'll come next. You know.
Not on this program.
The world of radio.
You know, it was 30 minutes ago that I said money shot, and I can't believe I said that. Now I've said it twice. So.
Well, you know, at least we haven't talked about any tramp stamps or anything that might elude some out there. So. Although if you watch even Corporate America, it references tramp stamps now in ads, in particularly, I forget who does it during the NFL. So, yeah, that one's out there pretty good, Doug.
And I'm proud to be an American, and where I can get my back tattooed.
Yeah, the country went a little. I guess the country went a little country at one point there. I'm not sure. Ever since, Billy Ray Cyrus and his mullet.
Well, just remember, Lee Greenwood, thanks to George W. Bush, sits on. That's another one of those. This is a remembering George moment. Lee Greenwood sits on the National Council for the Arts. Oh, you think I'm kidding?
What, was Larry the Cable Guy too busy?
Oh, touche.
Yeah, well, at least people know of that bad punchline, you know, outside of July 4th. The green, we have to invade Iraq or have a 4th of July fireworks show to hear his work. So, that's too much.
I just don't... There's so much sleaze and so much stupidity that has engulfed the last 8 years that it's actually stunning, isn't it, Spike? Lee Greenwood on the National Council of Humanities. George, you can't remember it all. That precious line, I forget who he was talking about, and he said it into the microphone. He married a West Texas girl just like me. Really, George? A West Texas girl just like you?
Yeah, the person he's going to miss him the most is David Letterman. I don't think there's been more comical goat for Letterman ever than just plain audio clips of George Bush speaking. Who would have thought that having the buying a license from C-SPAN for footage would be late-night comical gold?
never before, and never since, and never again. These were eight years that were outside all the bloodshed and death, damnation, and horror, Spike. This was 8 years that was it was a comic Camelot, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, my personal favorite of all of them was Sovereignty and a Sovereign Sovereign Nation.
Oh.
That of all of them, that might take the cake because it's one of the first times where there was an audience of college students laughing at him with his explanation. Most of the time it's before an audience that isn't bright enough to even pick up on it. But that one's great because you can hear them laughing at him. I mean, you feel like you're listening to something out of The Simpsons, you know. It's screenwriters would love to write comical material like this some of the times when he was busting out his lines.
There's a lot of us getting ready to retire. We're called baby boomers. As a matter of fact, my retirement age is 2008. Don't you just, you know, wish you... It's amazing.
It's amazing how many people have put him in charge of how many things. I mean, President of the United States, governor of the state, ran a Major League Baseball franchise. I mean... many other companies that he ran into the ground.
Only for you, Spike, just because it's you, okay? Here we go.
Right.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. Therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
We'll not see his like again.
That sounds like a Milhouse bombing out in the Spelunbee or something like that. That's the best part, though, is everyone laughing, because he clearly can't come up with an answer. He has no idea what to say. And the best, I mean, just the as soon as that laughter kicks in from the crowd, and the way he kind of rolls with it, where I think he thinks somehow he said something that they liked at this point, not realizing that because he's so stupid, they're laughing.
But you know, I have my
gains with that.
I have my personal favorite too, and let's just take a moment.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them." You know,
stunning, isn't it? Breathtaking.
Yeah, well, now we know what would have happened if Billy Carter would have become president. We always wondered what Jimmy's other brother was like. Well, we got him as president, more or less.
Well, and there's a similarity. You know, Billy Carter did a little bit of work for Muammar Gaddafi, and George Bush finally made a deal with him.
Both have a beer named after them somewhat. Had
W.
In Billy's case. Although
W, wait, I got it. I'm a marketing genius, Spike. W, the beer that's guaranteed never to have a head. No heads on W.
Yeah, that would certainly be a good one. Although you might have to add some things to it to make it a true W beer, but. Yeah, well, that was my personal favorite of products with his name on it was 4 years ago when I got way too many political magazines in the mail, including some very far-right ones, the Weekly Standard among them, had this. It was W Ketchup when they were so... this should be a sign right there, just how idiotic this support base was, because they had it out for Kerry's wife so much and the Heinz company in name.
Right.
That... They had a W Ketchup, and they were, like, limiting the number. You could only buy so many. They didn't want people overbuying them to collect the... It's probably Heinz Ketchup with a W label on it. How stupid are you people?
You've got me on a roll here, Spike, and I got to haul this one out because this is an especial favorite of mine, too.
My trip to Asia begins here in Japan for an important reason.
So polite, the Japanese.
It begins here because for a century and a half now, America and Japan have formed one of the great and enduring alliances of modern times. From that alliance has come an era of peace in the Pacific.
You know, I remember kicking furniture when that one came out. For a century and a half now, America and Japan have formed one of the great and enduring alliances of modern times.
As long as you don't count a nuclear...
That, you know, little dust-up in the middle of the 20th century. That was just...
or even
bit of a falling out, really.
So as long as you forgot that whole, you know, 10-year period of history, clearly, yeah. Which, obviously, he forgotten plenty of history. I mean, you know, Vietnam, Iraq, Chai Guerrero and him. You know, I guess we're finally at that end of the road in Bolivia with him. And the madness will soon come to an end. So I'm just,
You are, you're like me, you are worn out, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Close to a decade of being punch drunk from what has become everyday life, sadly.
Sadly, yeah. Wait. There was never anything, Spike, that was quite as entertaining as seeing foreign dignitaries at the White House with names that completely bamboozled dim leader.
Mr. Ambassador, thanks for coming. Ambassador Mamalias is with us today. There you are right there, Ambassador. Thank you. It's good to see your wife. Appreciate you all being here. Ambassador Koukouris of to Cyprus is with us. From Cyprus, the U.S. is with us. Senator, thank you for coming. It's good to see you again.
Senator, you got a promotion.
And, of course, there's a Grand Starfleet Admiral.
And Kang. Kang is here with us today. He's making peace with the from the Klingon Empire.
And WWE World Heavyweight Champion over there in that corner of the rock is here with us.
Finally,
I think actually there was one of the press dinners actually probably I think did have just that. Basically, the outtakes of Hee Haw was some of the great moments in the White House for the past 8 years. But I don't know. I guess maybe someone should have come up with a national toast for Tuesday night, you know, out there everywhere. Everyone has a toast to the end of the insanity, you know, the new beginning. Maybe I should have pitched this idea for November. I
know.
Can't wait for it to be finally over. It's like a divorce that drags on. That's basically what the past.
It's like going to the dentist and finding out that you don't need the root canal. It's that sort of overarching sense of relief.
Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be many things all of us will be disappointed with the new president, but at least he can speak in complete sentences. So if for nothing else, that alone, we've made an improvement. I can't believe that.
One more, and then I got to go. One more to share with you, okay?
I thought an interesting comment was made when somebody said to me, I heard somebody say, "Now where's Mandela?" Well, Mandela's dead because Saddam Hussein killed all the Mandelas.
All of them. Oh, based on that reaction, I think Spike's got a new favorite.
I didn't realize Saddam had so much to do with South Africa. That's amazing.
And I didn't know there were so many Mandelas. God, it must be like that Michael Keaton movie where he keeps replicating himself.
If nothing else, there'll be plenty of soundboards in the next few years to do prank calls with George W. Bush behind, so... Be ready. George W. Bush is going to be calling a phone near you.
Okay, one more. I can't stop.
We're giving this young democracy the chance. It's in our interest to do so. Because, as John Howard accurately noted, when he went to thank the Austrian troops there last year.
Yep, the Austrians. I'll go
on this one week on my way out. Although there's a few days left, someone could still do it. I'm surprised no one got him with, of all references, a Baba Booey line, actually, because if any president would be dumb enough to repeat it over and over, who's that? What's that? I don't get it. It would be him. I mean, you know, we did have Sarah Palin with the leader of France. So if any group of people would get with a prank on the way out, get a Republican somewhere near you.
Well, Spike, you have yourself a great evening, and we'll count down to bye bye George.
All right, have a good one.
Take care, man. Bye. Oh, damn! I forgot to ask Spike about the Eagles. Of course, he's a Fins fan, so he's kind of out of the playoff hunt. All right, I'm going back to the phones. One more. Just one. Come on, this is like a box of chocolates. One more, because it's prayer meeting. And this one has a sort of special significance, brethren and sistren.
I spoke to Governor Pawlenty and Mayor Ryback this morning. I told them that the secretary would be there. I told them we would help with rescue efforts, but also told them how much we are in prayer for those who suffered. And I thank my fellow citizens for holding up those who are suffering right now in prayer.
Yes, yes, brothers and sisters, George Bush finally admitted it. Those who are suffering right now in prayer. I mean, you know how it is when you're waiting to leave the service and you want to get to the cafeteria before the Church of Christ does, because ain't nothing left when them bunch of locusts get done. And your preacher, he won't quit praying. He's a praying and please, Jesus, look out for the shut-ins and he won't shut up. And you're thinking, you know, that steamship round of roast beef is going to be a nothing but a little bit of nubs and shavings if you don't quit with the praying, preacher. We're suffering through prayer. Like that. So, let's roll it on. Darn. How did I know that was going to happen? 8 years. And there's tons of these. There are tons and tons and tons. There's this one where he was just liquored up out of his mind.
Before I'm going to take some questions, I'd like to comment about one other diplomatic development, and that took place in the Far East. At the six-party talks in Beijing, North Korea agreed to specific actions that will bring us closer to a Korea Peninsula that is free of nuclear weapons. Specifically, North Korea agreed that within 60 days, it will shut down and seal all operations at the primary nuclear facilities it has used to produce weapons-grade plutonium. It has agreed to allow international inspectors to verify and monitor this progress. It is committed to disclosing all of its nuclear programs as an initial step toward abandoning these programs.
Pills, booze, I don't... Oh, darn, wait a minute. Okay, I'm screwing up bad. Somebody has to, like, send me a private message or something once in a while. I can't let this go by. There may be beauty in here. And we're sitting... This was almost like it was the warm-up for this without even me realizing I was doing the warm-up. So, yeah, we gotta check this. And we will. We'll also take the call that is coming in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, wow, is that me already?
That's you already.
Well, hi, Bob. This is Sue calling.
Hey, Sue.
Hey. Hey, I just, you and Spike talking about Shrub's last days. I want to call in and give everyone a heads up real quick. Lottie had this idea the other day, and I just think it's perfect, and it's totally off prayer meeting topic, but what the hell, after 8 years, we all deserve to be together for this one.
Yep.
He would like, and I agree, as many of us should be in the chat room Tuesday around noon as possible. That way we can all see the Bush countdown clock hit zero.
Oh, that's so cool. I wish I could be there.
I'll have to get a screen recorder or something like that going. That way I can record it for you, and you can see the last seconds of it tick away. Because I think it's, you know, and people that don't have a Horn chat account yet, if you have trouble setting one up, shoot me an email real quick, Sue@HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and we'll get you set up. And if you have the time, pop in next Tuesday and, help us all count down the last seconds together, because, by God, after 8 years of this crap, we've earned it.
We have. We so have. And you know what? I just caught myself. I was thinking about Dear Leader's valedictory speech on the networks Thursday night, and I'm like a kid on Christmas. You know how it is with little kids. You make the advent calendar with the hanging Hershey kisses or some of the candy canes or whatever it is, and the kids, at least this kid, would sneak up and try to take one more piece of candy from the day the next day, sort of trying to hurry Christmas along. I already had it Thursday, and I just went looking over to C-SPAN trying to find Dear Leader's address. That's what a mess I am.
Well, you kept saying tomorrow night, last night, and it's like, ah, he's just got his days mixed up. He's
no, I want it to be.
Oh, bless your heart, you went looking for it already. Well, I tell you, it's...
dig this. I mean, you want some irony? Here's some irony. At the same time that George Bush is flying out of D.C., I'll be flying in.
Isn't that just, and
I'm really looking forward to it because for the first time ever, I'm gonna get to hang out with Guy James.
Yeah, when he said that today, I was like, yes, that's just gonna be too cool. You two being together, that is gonna be some good radio. Tune in, people. That is gonna be.
Yeah, well, sadly, I won't be on the air with Guy. I'll be fighting through a million people trying to get on Metro trains. It'll be like a scene out of Casablanca or something. But I'll be going in when people are coming out, so maybe I won't have such a difficult time. But yeah, I'll probably get to Union Station about 4:30 p.m. And I was talking to the guy earlier today, and I said, where in God's name are we going to go eat dinner? You won't be able to get a hot dog from a cart vendor. There's going to be so many people, but maybe they'll all be gone to the balls by then, you know, eating little finger sandwiches and shrimp platters and stuff. I don't know.
Cheese and cracker trays, not the substantial ones.
Yeah, right, the substantial cheese. Jesus!
Hey, you know, I once went to the Olive Garden once. And not only did they not serve olives, they didn't make me eat in a garden next to the tomatoes and bean plants.
I know. And I mean, they brought me a bowl of soup, and it was a substantial bowl of soup with these substantial breadsticks.
And I dipped my shoe in my iced tea, and no one laughed. No one. God damn. I hate these people. I hate them so hard.
You're just left flummoxed. But tell me, Sue, I trust you for just intense candor, because you have never failed to, you know, call me out or say, you know, Bob, you know, What does that guy get $40 million a year for that you and me and John and Lottie and Peter and Ben, what?
If I knew.
I mean, do I need to start telling more stories about substantial cheese platters? Is that really the keys to the kingdom?
you need to talk about substantial cheese platters and say my friends a hell of a lot more. I mean, come on, Bob, you're never going to be able to buffalo anyone and get the big money unless you say, my friends. Look at what it got Sydney. A $10 million or $100 million beer heiress. I'm sure he looks at a lot of her family, my friends.
My friends.
Everyone's your friend. You know, with the goddamn Republicans, everyone is their friends, but we're the one accused of singing Kumbaya. We don't go, my friends. We don't go around saying that.
Right, because we're not hypocrites. You know, one of the things I hate the most is in the House of Representatives, my friend, the learned wingnut from... Stop it. Go down to the well there and punch it out for a little while, please. Yeah, all these things that we have to think back on, Sue. What would have happened? Well, first of all, tell me if I'm being all caveman when I say that if Dick Cheney had looked at me and told me to go F myself like he did Pat Leahy, I would have punched him. I mean, I would have. I don't take that. I mean, I take it, you know, in jest or whatever, you know, maybe during a football team, you know, when I was rooting for Florida and everybody else was rooting for Oklahoma, and I'd get them, Tebow, and oh, go F yourself. That's not cause for fisticuffs. But when Dick, what would have happened? What would the history of this country been in the last few years if Dick Cheney just would have turned around, said that, and Leahy would have turned around and delivered a solid right cross right across Dick Cheney's glass jaw?
Right. Let's turn the whole thing around. Let's say that the Supreme Court had all bumped their heads and had given the 2000 election to Al Gore instead of George Bush. And then Al Gore bumped his head and put on an administration like George Bush has. And within the last 24, 48 hours or so, the report about that one dude from the Justice Department, I can't remember what his name is, but he was who was it that released that that report that he did, in fact, do the hiring at the Justice Department based on politics, because he hired like something like 72 Republicans and two Democrats or something like that. It was clearly partisan, which is illegal. Now, if an Al Gore administration had tried any of that, I don't care if it was 0 hour, 15 hours before inauguration.
Washington, D.C. would have been in ashes.
Well, yeah, because the Republicans would have had Congress open all night long, holding hearings, getting testimony and everything, and taking votes together.
And CNN and all the news would have this the stunning bumper music, dum dum la dum dum la dum, America under siege.
They're good at that. They are good at that. But it's just really striking the crap that the Republican Party has gotten away with, and largely we've allowed them to get away with it. The Democrats have allowed them to get. We didn't have a supermajority. We still don't have one. But we didn't have a supermajority after the 2006 election. But what we should have done was do what the Republicans did back in 96, and they did it in 95, and I think they did it in 96, where they just shut the government down. They did not like the budget that Bill Clinton sent them, and they were unwilling to compromise. They knew what they wanted him to put in his budget. He said no, and it was primarily more money for education. And the Republicans said no, and they just didn't bother to vote on it, and the government ran out of money, and they shut the government down. That's what we should have done. They didn't have no stinking supermajority. You don't need one to do it. When they were very effective.
No, all you need is a little political courage.
Sure, sure. And that's the one. If Barack Obama does nothing else, I would at least like some honest-to-God investigations of the crimes that have... I mean, how many times do Shrub and the Dick have to admit them on television now?
Well, speaking of admissions, did you see that it's really happened? There is an honest-to-goodness admission now, Sue, with regard to torture. A Bush administration official has come out and said that, yes, what we did, and gave the name of the victim, what we did was torture within the meaning of the law. Straight up admitted it. Blew me away when I saw it.
They did that in our names, and that's supposed to make us safe. Thank you. All it does is breed hatred, and all it does is make their people, these supposed terrorists that are everywhere lurking in the bushes out in front of the house waiting to get us, all that does is make them anxious to return the favor. It doesn't solve anything. So stop doing.
No, and now, now 24's got Jack Bauer out there torturing people with ballpoint pens. It might be a long season of 24.
Fox is such a joke. Fox is such a joke. Like, Rupert Murdoch can go fly. We've even talked about how he's hijacked American college football now.
Yep.
Him and his stupid Big Ten network. Rupert Murdoch is such a putz.
Well, I had an email not too long back where I think it was David from Tennessee was talking about all the possibilities of calling it Rupert Vision and Rupert News and the Rupert the Rupert Channel. Just start calling it what it is.
Well, and I had read something here recently about his youngie wife is changing him because she's more politically liberal than he is, and she's having a big effect on him.
And that he hates, not dislikes, not doesn't care much for, but hates Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, here it is. Here it is. I wanted to find his name. According to Bob Woodward, this is, I guess, a scoop. A top Pentagon official went on the record and said that the U.S. did, in fact, torture Mohammed al-Qahtani, who was a Saudi who said he hoped to become part of the 9/11 attack. Judge Susan Crawford, remember this name, was in charge of deciding whether to bring Guantanamo Bay detainees, beginning with Australian David Hicks, to trial, has concluded that the U.S. military tortured a Saudi Arabian who allegedly planned to take part in the September 11, 2001 attacks. She said Mohammed al-Qahtani was interrogated with techniques that included sustained isolation, sleep deprivation, public nudity, and prolonged exposure to cold, leaving him in a life-threatening condition. This is the quote from Judge Crawford. She said, "We tortured Qahtani. His treatment met the legal definition of torture, and that's why I did not refer the case for prosecution."
Hmm. Well, that kind of shoots that whole "we're going to bring him to justice" thing right down, doesn't it? Because if you torture him, you can't prosecute him because you can't use anything that they've said.
Right, because of an old legal doctrine called the fruit of the poisonous tree. In other words, if you get the information by breaking the law, everything in that chain becomes illegal too.
Right.
And
but how is that justice? How are they doing us any damn favors?
5 days, 5-6. You know, maybe this came out yesterday, but 5 to 6 days before these bastards, these criminals, these warmongers, these bloodthirsty maniacs. The Dracula Cheney and his little Bush Renfield. I really like that image. I wish that would have come to me about 4 years ago. Yes, master. 5 days before these thugs leave office, and I admire the woman for saying it on the record, because she's beyond their reach now, she thinks. The memo to Judge Susan Crawford. Let's see. Yeah, four little words that you need to remember and live by for the rest of your days. Stay off. Work with me, Sue. Small.
Oh, yeah, small planes.
Aircraft, yeah.
Yep.
We tortured the guy. And, you know, this isn't some opinion. This is a person who analyzed the evidence that probably the defendant himself couldn't see. Can somebody email this to Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi?
Right.
Can we at least get some hearings? Maybe could somebody perhaps send this along to Eric Holder with a big Sharpie notation at the top that says, "Yo, Eric, job one."
Exactly.
But it is frustrating to see this stuff come out 5 days before it's all over.
Right.
Just like the email thing. Really? 5 days before they leave and the judge says, "Safeguard all the emails, guys, on the way out." Okay, you betcha, Judge. Right on it. Sucker.
Unless the Obama administration is playing it right, because when Ford pardoned Nixon, Nixon had been indicted by the House of Representatives. He had been impeached.
No, he had not. The vote had not been taken.
In the House of Representatives?
Right. Because Bill Clinton was only the second American president ever to be actually impeached. They told Richard Nixon, "We're going to impeach you," and Richard Nixon had the common decency to bug out.
Well, then how in the hell could there have been a part? You know, I just got to say this, you know, and I'm not ashamed. I'll never be ashamed to let anyone know what my age is. I'm 40. And I remember.
Don't brag. Don't brag to the 40, almost 46-year-old guy. Don't brag to the guy who's downhill to 50 now.
I'm over the hill myself. I'll be 41 in April, so I'm right on your heels, baby. Keep moving or I'm going to run you over. But I remember going to school, growing up through school and learning, and I've told Mom and Dad this before, Dad before he passed away, that, I remember learning about the Nixon administration and what shame they must have felt, you know, how embarrassed you must have felt to be an American and have that as your president. Little did I know that as an adult, I would have the exact same thing. It is scary. And they had it twice in their lifetime. Dad hated George Bush with a passion. He had the 1 year Dad wanted one of those, I got Dad one of those talking George W. Bush dolls where you push the button and he says something stupid.
And you sure you didn't just hire George Bush in for a party or something?
Well, Dad wanted it because one of the guys he works with is one of the Republican higher echelons here in the city where I live. So Dad wanted it to go in and torment the guy with it. But Dad would push the button and, you know, you dumb bastard. You know, he'd say, push it again, and he'd say something else. You're working hard, put food on the
plate. I think your dad and my dad would have gotten along because back in years past during the Reagan administration, Sue, we had this delightful little Yorkshire Terrier. His name was Nicholas. And Nicholas had a chew toy. It was a squeaky rubber chew toy of Ronald Reagan's head.
Perfect.
And he loved playing with that Reagan squeaky like you can't imagine. And Dad loved to watch him play with that Reagan squeaky. And they developed a game that they played together. Nicholas would go and find Reagan, and Dad would look down at him and say, "Nicholas, bring me that nasty old empty-headed president." And all of a sudden, you'd hear Reagan go squeak, and here would come Nicholas with Reagan in his mouth, and Dad would and they'd sit there and play tug of war with the old empty-headed Republican. And then Dad would get the squeaky, and he'd toss it to the other end of the living room and say, "Go get that old empty-headed Republican president, Nicholas." And away little Nicholas would go on his little Yorkshire Terrier feet.
And who says they're just dumb animals, huh? Tell me.
Nicholas could spot an ignorant old empty-headed Republican president from a mile away. and I mean, he had real effect because he would keep him. He had a place where he kept him and everything, so that he could always have him to hand if he and Dad decided they wanted to play a little bit.
Oh, that is too funny. Oh, that's too funny. Well, all I can say is, gang, that just drink heavily until the 20th. We'll make it through. And
well, you asked a question though, and I would like to because it was a serious question, and I'd like to put the answer to it out there.
Okay.
You asked, how could Ford have pardoned Nixon if Nixon had not been charged with anything?
Right.
And that is a question that is still being debated by political scientists and historical scholars of the United States. You know the way that the Bush administration and Alberto Gonzalez and that David, what was his name? Was it David? That jackass lawyer and John Yoo all got together and decided that it wasn't torture if it didn't induce severe bodily harm, organ failure, or death.
Right.
Yeah. In other words, just playing fast and loose with the law, or how the Bush administration said, well, you know, the law here says that we can't data mine on the citizens of the United States, but there's nothing in here that says we can't hire a private contractor to do it. Remember that one?
Uh-huh.
Well, the Nixon administration lawyers looked around on behalf of Gerald Ford, bumbling old wingnut that he was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a man who was so loopy when he was a member of the House from Michigan, he tried to impeach Earl Warren. That was his baby. What was
Ford's college alma mater?
You never miss a lick, do you? Funny
University of Michigan for yep. people who don't know.
Yeah, funny looking helmets that they stole from the University of Delaware, by the way. So what happened was the Nixon administration, Ford administration lawyers executed a preemptive pardon. preemptive. Oh, preemptive war. The Republicans like this preemptive business. They executed a preemptive pardon. In other words, they took the Constitution, turned the idea of the pardon on its head, and said that the president had the power, because he was president, to issue pardons to people to keep them from ever being charged with a crime. And then, if I recall my history correctly, nobody had the guts to challenge it. Because Gerald Ford had just told us that our long national nightmare is over.
Well, what are we going to do in 2009 when the exact same thing happens? Because I have a feeling a week from, or this coming Monday, we're going to be screaming to beat the band because the list of the pardons have come out. His final pardons have come out. And I have a feeling it's going to be full of
Scooters and you and
people and
Addington, David Addington. Yeah, that creepy guy. Well, you know, because somebody had put the theory to me at one point, Sue, of what happens if George Bush issues a pardon of Cheney and then resigns and Cheney pardons Bush. Because the one thing a sitting president cannot do is pardon his own impeachment. So, yeah, that's what I was asking Spike earlier. You know, is there one little subatomic particle of you that still thinks that, they haven't played their last card yet? Because that subatomic particle does exist inside me.
Right. Oh, they've got their ace up their sleeve still. You can bet on it.
Oh, they've got a stack of aces. I mean, these are some card cheating bastards.
Right.
And they're loaded on a sleeve spring.
Yeah. That way, when one's gone, they got the other one there at the quick. Yeah. It's and the one thing that scares me is him declaring martial law, because they conveniently I've been told Mark said it, and Benny in the chat room said it, that they left Washington, D.C. underfunded for the inauguration with just $15 million when Denver and Minneapolis got $50 million each for security. So that's purposely underfunding for an event they know is coming. But what frightens me, Bob, I don't trust any of them. Like I said, I hate them all so hard that he's declared a state of emergency. What's going to stop him from declaring martial law? You know, that's another card that I worry they've got hiding up their sleeve. They don't want to go. They're having way too much fun.
Figuratively speaking, I will not be satisfied until Dick Cheney has a wooden stake through his heart and is absolutely surrounded by a wall of garlic. Because the evil that my God, it doesn't end. This sorry, rotten, old, hateful bastard gave an interview to Jim Lehrer on PBS's NewsHour, and Lehrer asks Cheney the following. But Mr. Vice President, getting from there to here, talking about the Iraq war, the Iraq occupation, but Mr. Vice President, getting from there to here, 4,500 Americans have died. At least 100,000 Iraqis have died. Has it been worth that?
I think so.
Why?
Because I believed at the time what Saddam Hussein represented was, especially in the aftermath of 9/11, was a terror-sponsoring state so designated by the State Department. He had produced and used weapons of mass destruction, chemical and biological agents. He'd had a nuclear program in the past, and he did have a relationship with Al-Qaeda. And so I think, given the track record of Saddam Hussein, I think we did exactly the right thing. I think the country is better off for it today.
Does this upstanding Christian know that he's going to die one day and have to atone for all this? He's going to be, according to his Bible, he's going to be asked about all this. He's going to be asked, is your name in the book of life?
Yeah. Jonah, who's next on the next on the list? Well, St. Peter, we've got Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney. Step right up, Dick. Jonah, get the toothpicks for his eyelids. We don't want him blinking for any of this. I want that. Lord, I want that to be true. I so very... You know, but this is, you know, this is a throwback to the thing they asked Madeleine Albright about all the children who died as a result of the sanctions against Iraq during the Clinton administration. You know, they say a million children have died in Iraq. Do you think it was worth it? And she said, I think so. Something happens. Something happens to people who have that kind of power.
Sure.
You know, whether and this is a direct offshoot of something that happened in this country that wasn't supposed to happen soon. This country was not supposed to have leadership, elected representatives and elected leaders who viewed themselves as kings.
Right.
George Washington was offered outright a monarchy. King George the First of the United States. And he rejected it out of hand. But these guys want that. And they like playing with human beings' lives as if they were less than pawns on a chessboard.
Well, it just goes to show you that if given their way, they would create a homeland as bad as the ones our forefathers felt the need to flee from all those years ago, all those centuries ago. Only this time, there's no place else for us to go. And additionally, our countries of origin, you know, because originally I'm like German on dad's side and Dutch on mom's side, you know, those countries don't want me. They say, just go ahead and stay over there, American. You're all two nutters for us. They understand us, but they don't want us around. They understand we're not all guilty, but they don't want us there.
No, not even a little bit.
Because they feel like a lot of people felt about the Germans after World War II, that type of thinking is inbred to you and that you're that inherently evil. So they just, you know, and who can blame them, you know? That's the work that we've got cut out for us is changing this worldwide mindset. And when you got people like Dick saying, you know, it was worth it. Who was it worth it to, you big chicken shit, Mr. Five Deferments, ahead of the priorities? Did you now? Did you? It's too bad you couldn't have had other priorities these last 8 years and save us all a lot of grief.
A whole lot of families, a whole lot of grief.
Sure. And
4,500 of them, and that's just the dead. And I don't mean just the dead ones. That's the dead. There's a whole different brand of suffering that goes with being the loved one of somebody who left their personality, left a portion of their brain, left a limb, left their ability to sleep through the night in some benighted base camp this or camp that in Iraq.
Right.
I can't begin to because I remember when the babies were little, Sue. There's this thing called the night terrors, where they just scream in the night because they've had, you know, they're babies and they have their first bad dream and it's just horrible. And they're inconsolable. And to be an adult and have to deal with that,
right.
not because of anything short of the fact that a pair of bloodthirsty monsters sent you into a war that you had no business in, and the only damn thing in the world you could do was do your duty and try to get home alive.
That's right. And then when they did get home, what'd they have to look forward to?
Walter Reed.
Veterans Administration health care system that was grossly underfunded.
Rats. They got rats.
And mold.
And, here's a blast from the past. It's all sort of flooding over me like some sort of toxic wave now. Do you remember the story about how when the Walter Reed story broke, the Veterans Administration's, or the Army's, the answer to it was to hire Disney to put a better face on it?
Yeah, how's that all working out?
It's a small ward after all. It's a small ward after... Oh, Jesus. Tough.
It makes you weep. It truly makes you weep. And the surprise, the hits just keep on coming. We're not done yet, but we're close enough to the end. If we can just lean on each other's back.
All I can tell Barack Obama is cut the damn cards first. Hey, Obama, come over here. I want to play a little game, three card Monty before I go out. The winner gets to keep presidency. Cut the cards. Sorry, that's just me.
Well, I think maybe I trust you, but that's bad.
Yeah, see, I haven't even begun to work on an Obama yet. Not that my George was any good either.
Well, but your George sometimes is just frighteningly close. But I tell you what, I'm going to get off the phone so you can wrap up.
Yeah, it is time to wrap it up and put the bow on it. Sue, it's great talking to you. This doesn't happen often enough.
Yes, good talking to you, too. I'm going to go tie into a cheese platter.
Will it be substantial?
A substantial one, indeed.
Will there be ranch?
Put my shirt tail in it.
That a girl.
Everyone, don't forget, come join us in the chat room next Tuesday, and let's all count down the last seconds of the Bush administration together. We've been through it all together. Let's be together for this.
Here, here. And maybe we could have some, everybody in the chat room could have some horn gear on. Probably got time enough to get your horn ball cap or your horn T-shirt from the Head On Radio Network store, the horn store there at headonradionetwork.com.
Absolutely.
And hey, you know, everybody's got a webcam now. Take a picture. Let's make a photo gallery. Well, there's already a photo gallery.
We already have a photo.
Get your horn gear. Take your picture. Let's put it on the website.
Sounds like a good idea. Send your pictures. Get your horn gear on and then snap your picture. Send it to me, Sue, at headonradionetwork.com. We'll get you in the photo gallery. Too.
Save me a couple of cubes of the spicy Velveeta, would you?
Okay, I'll do that.
I ain't had none of that in a while.
I bet you probably haven't. We'll talk at you later. Bye.
Bye, Sue.
Bye-bye.
All around great gal. Den mother of the chat room. The videographer extraordinaire. And what a wit. That's Sue calling from Ohio. This email just rolled in from Jay. She says, because Jews don't have Sunday morning services, they can torture their children with Sunday school from 8 a.m. to noon, and the same on Saturdays in 9th and 10th grades. My parents would haul my irreverent butt into Dallas for Sunday school every Sunday for the school year. There were lectures and things of interest for the adults. It was a big congregation. My dad was obsessed with getting to a restaurant for lunch. You know, this sounds like something from Gene Shepherd. My dad was obsessed with getting to a restaurant for lunch ASAP. He'd park the car at the far end of the parking lot and often take me out of class 5 minutes early. Every Sunday I'd hear the same invocation. We have to beat the church crowd. Your mention of suffering the long-winded preacher triggered a great memory for me. Jay. Thanks, Jay. Oh, God, we've all got our scars, don't we? Stunning, isn't it? And then, by the way, this one last thing, just to wrap things up, because I like to put a nice little bow on everything. A couple of nights ago, I mentioned the story about Ehud Olmert bragging about how he basically dragged George Bush around by the ears and told him, you know, and made George Bush bow and scrape and kowtow and knuckle under and do his bidding where the resolution in the UN was concerned, telling George that Israel did not want that resolution passed and that George acceded and that he actually got George out, you know, pulled him off of the podium in Philadelphia or some such. Well, it turns out yesterday that the State Department and the Bush administration both said, never happened, didn't happen, wasn't real, didn't happen. We wouldn't do nothing like that. And my response at the time was that the story of the White House denial was problematic because these bastards have lied to us for 8 long years and suddenly we're going to believe them? That seems like an insane act. Or, on the other hand, Ehud Olmert lied up the whole story, and that sort of makes him a pretty creepy character. So there's no, you know, it's nasty either way. Well, there's a follow-up. After the State Department and after the White House said, no, never happened, nothing like it, wasn't nothing like it. Well, they have, as described at thinkprogress.org, been on a full court press to deny Olmert's claims that he forced the United States to abstain from voting on the UN's Gaza ceasefire resolution. But today, Olmert's aides came out and said that he stands by his claim. And that he, this is a quote, told the story as it happened. UN Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad, in the UN dispatch, is noted as having made the following statement. He said that Rice spent an unprecedented 3 days working on the resolution. Oh, really? Condoleezza Rice working at 3 days is unprecedented. Well, you know, it takes time to go out and find the latest monoblonics. Spent an unprecedented 3 days working on the resolution, and the United States drafted a big portion of the resolution, which he described as very reasonable. That's Zalmay Khalilzad, UN ambassador. So who do you believe? In a contest of liars, who do you believe? It's up to you. Who do you believe? Who do you trust? And that happens entirely inside your own processes. Thanks to everybody for a wonderful evening. This has been one of the most enjoyable prayer meetings I think we've had in a long time. I really, really appreciated you joining in, however you do so. I appreciate you joining in, even if you're joining in later, by podcast or archive. I thank you for your emails. I thank you for your calls, your presence in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Get there or be square. One of the funnest places, on the intertubes. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Like I said in talking to Sue, maybe run by and get yourself some horn gear from the horn store. The Head On Radio Network store open 24 hours, always fresh. You can find it at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Ball caps as low as $13.99. We haven't marked them up a whole bunch because we just want folks to be able to get the clothing. So maybe everybody get some horn gear or not. Join in the chat room. Count down the end of George W. Bush's nightmare reign of terror. Think of me. I'll be thinking of you. I will be in the air. I'm really looking forward to getting to Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, finally meeting one of my, my favorite host on the horn, Guy James. Getting to hang out with him a little bit, and then on the following Wednesday, going to this Progressive Media Summit. I think that's going to be magnificent, and I will try to report back with as much information as I humanly possibly can. It'll be an all-day affair, so Guy won't be on the air on Wednesday either, neither will I. And then Thursday I'll be flying back home here to the Hills and Hollers. And I'll take the shoes back off. You know, you got to wear shoes in January in D.C. It's a compromise I'm willing to make. Get back here and Flying Spaghetti Monster willing and the beer volcano don't go off. I'll be on the air Thursday evening. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Peter Godbold. Thanks, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You may rest assured that I will raise the Coal River Wind Project in the awareness of all the progressive media types that I run across on Wednesday. I give you my word. Because you know what? If Coal River Mountain Watch can stand upstream and upwind for all of us, downstream and downwind, by God, I'll make sure people know about it. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
show is on in less than 1 minute.